Now everybody, let me tell you a story about Hollywood shame. Where terrible actors and scripts collide. Oh, what a mess it is on the other side. Saw the lights, camera, action begin. But all I got was a movie that plunged in a spin. From the first scene to the credits that roll. Oh, Hollywood disaster, you've taken its toll. Silver screen says cool, bad movies galore. Can't help but wonder what the hell were they making these for. Throwing some cliches to shut the predictable plot. It's a train wreck, I tell you, it's all they ever got.
And now for our feature presentation.
Welcome to the Silver Screen Cesspool, where we review the poo. And now your host, the surveyor of cinema, the mocker of moronic movies, the terror of tiny town, the last known survivor of battlefield Earth, the one of many, Alan Smith.
Tonight's cinematic stinker, no pun intended, is the 2016 movie I Was a Teenage Were-Skunk. This so-called tribute to the teenage monster movies of the 1950s is similar to I Was a Teenage Werewolf, except that instead of turning into a werewolf, he turns into a skunk. Who'd have thunk he'd be a teenage were-skunk? This is the question the theme song asks, and the answer is absolutely nobody. Absolutely no one in this movie passes for a teenager either. Like, not even close. The film is set in the 1950s, and I think some of these actors were actually teenagers in the 1950s. One guy is so noticeably not a teenager, you'd swear the casting agent thought they were shooting a porn set in high school. The movie starts, as you'd expect, with two grown-ass adults playing as high school students going parking up on good old Lover's Lane. As soon as they begin to get some of that 1950s version of hot and steamy, they get killed by an unseen monster. I assume it's a were-skunk, but it's never actually said. After the opening credits, we're treated to the gang sitting around the malt shop, making plans to see Ricky Nelson in concert. We're interrupted by a musical number called The Smell of Love, for no discernible reason. The backup dancers and slash singers have the most bored look on their faces throughout the whole thing. They are not the slightest bit entertained by our hero's terrible Elvis impersonation. Our hero, Curtis, walks home with his lady friend and tries to ask her out. When she doesn't take the bait, he decides to climb a tree and be a peeping Tom on the hot, red-headed veterinarian as she changes clothes inside her house. Without a McFly to protect him from danger, he gets sprayed in the face by a giggling skunk. The next day, Curtis's parents make him take their dog Turbo to the vet because the dog smells like lousy weed. I want to make it clear here that Turbo is a dog and not a breakdancer. The receptionist at the vet's office is apparently some sort of Jamaican voodoo stereotype, and immediately notice he's been marked by the one who squirts. But again, the veterinarian is hot, so he can't help but staring at her, and I'm quoting the movie here, staring at her chest melons, and he has a reaction in his, and again, quoting the movie here, has a reaction in his trouser tuba. While a werewolf changes to a wolf every full moon, a were-skunk changes into a skunk every erection. And given he's allegedly a teenager, this happens a lot, including when he's looking at the illustrations of the bras in the JCPenney catalog. The next day, Curtis decides to prove he's cool by drinking beer with Charles Manson. There's absolutely nothing gained from this scene. There is no continuation of this plot thread. There is no reappearance of Charlie Manson. I think it's just here for the guffaws of seeing a mass murderer in a non-murdery context. He leaves the bar and decides to stop by his lady friend's house and proclaim his feelings for her. She's still wearing the same cheerleader uniform she's been wearing the entire movie, despite any sort of relevance to day or time. According to the uniform she's wearing, the team she cheers for is called Sports. They start making out, and he apparently gets excited because he skunks out. And next thing you know, he ran. He ran so far away. The skunk makeup actually looks pretty rad, except for the nose part, which has a visible elastic band. Very visible elastic band. The following day, Curtis has no memory of the prior night, but he decides to hang out with his no-good beatnik friend and two floozy lady friends. They go to someone's backyard pool, and the girls swim in their skivvies and splash water on each other in the most 1950s way possible. I don't know how someone splashes water in a 1950s style, but they did, and had some of the finest acting in this movie. Stinky McGee, of course, gets aroused and goes all feral and kills them all, as skunks are prone to do. Meanwhile, Curtis's dad, the local sheriff, and his mom are having all sorts of freaky-deaky role-playing sex. You have the right to remain sexy. You have the right to an attorney if you want somebody to watch. But there's dead teens up at Makeout Point, so Daddy needs to go investigate. He investigates and winds up at the beatnik's house, questioning his dad. The beatnik's house is clearly a child's backyard playhouse, complete with chalk drawings on the interior walls. Like, it's not even taller than 4 feet. It's kind of bizarre, actually. Curtis finally realizes he's a teenage skunk and talks to his girl, but he's afraid she will reject him. She accepts him, in fact, and offers to blow them, so I think that conversation went fairly well. Only he doesn't know what that is, so she explains it to him, whispering in his ear. And then she starts to blow him. But apparently she doesn't know what it is either, because she's literally blowing air on him. But somehow it's still too sexy for him, and he begins to change and runs off. It also was apparently too sexy for her, too, as soon as he leaves, she gets a little she-bop a wee-bop with her pom-pom handle. And oh no! Turns out she's a teenage were-skunk, too. The sexy role-playing continues between Curtis's dad and mom-slash-sheriff's deputy. That is to say, the actress playing his mom also plays Deputy Greg, who frequently is losing half of his mustache. Need a better glue or something, I don't know. The sexy role-playing this time, by the way, circus clown and bearded lady. Hot. Curtis tries to not think sexy thoughts, but unfortunately he takes refuge in Dad's shed, where Sheriff Naughty Boy hides his girly magazines. This leads to a climatic battle between the were-skunk and the clown, Sheriff. Gary shows up to save the day, but not before offering to wear the lion tamer costume in a threesome with the sheriff and himself, his wife, threesome with two... You get what's happening here. They want to get freaky deaky with themselves or something. I don't know. It's kind of confusing. Anyway, She Skunk shows up just in time to stop Gary from shooting He Skunk. The two skunks start to face each other and growl at each other. But then there's a moment of recognition, as neither one has seen the other one in skunk form yet. Is she going to reject him, though? She turns to him and says, I said I wasn't going to do the voice. I told myself I wasn't going to do the voice, but I think I'm going to do the voice. Okay, so she turns to him and says, I've got 2 tickets to Ricky Nelson, baby. Come with me Friday, don't say maybe. I'm just a teenage weird skunk baby like you. I shouldn't have done the voice. I was a teenage weird skunk is available streaming on Tubi.
Silver Screen Cesspool is written, directed, and starring Alan Smithy. Assistant director, producer, and stunt coordinator, Alan Smithy. Boom mic operator, sound editing and music by Alan Smithy. Construction coordinator, The Amazing Rando. Makeup by Crayola. Catering was provided by the Soylent Corporation. Alan Smithy will be back in Return of the Curse of the Planet of the Prehistoric Bikini Ninjas versus Kingdom of the Bride of the Killer, Shark Cheerleaders 2, Electric Boogaloo.